Hi, this is Keith Wooden, and welcome to Story Mosaics. You know those commercials, the ones about an insurance company? Well, auspiciously about an insurance company. They'll remain nameless because they've never sent me one single check. Yeah, you know which one I'm talking about. They feature this guy by the name of Dr. Rick. He's a life coach. Actually, they call him a parental life coach. And he's on this mission. He's on a mission to help us not become like our parents. His diagnosis, parentamorphosis. Whoa, does that sound big? Parentamorphosis. Every time I see one of those commercials, I wince because the fact is, it's not about me becoming like my dad. It's about the fear that my kids have of becoming like me. Oh. I can give you all kinds of examples, but I might as well take a few of their commercials because one of them is about a fire starting episode among these friends that are gathered together. And he's saying that they're going to let one of the members start the fire. But as he starts to set up the logs to start the fire, they all have a contribution to make, a little different means to do it, where to put the kindling, how to stack the logs, when to ignite it. And before long, it's just given up. And Dr. Rick looks like he's about to have a panic attack. Or the one about the pump talk. I hate to say this, but I do this all the time where they're filling up their tank and I look around and I see if the guy at the other tank, maybe he wants to get into a conversation. And even if he doesn't, I can start one with him. I will. And so I tell him a little bit about how the things are organized in the gas station and the fact that the bathrooms are clean and they'll give the code if you want it. And then I could go on and on. Some of them commercials, some of them just my life stories. How my kids worry and worry and worry when I give them a call that I'm somehow going to be giving them a weather update about a vortex that's making its way down into our area. And suddenly I become obsessed. And so does my wife, by the way. We suddenly are taking up all of these hobbies such as origami and painting and watercoloring and acrylics and beekeeping and candle making and nesting dolls. I don't know what all the things are. And now we have a little bit of extra time on our hands. So we're taking our pantry and organizing it more carefully. And we're facing all of the labels towards the front. And we have all of our quart, pint, and decorative jars labeled now. And sometimes I'm guilty of stopping the traffic on our road, which is a little bit of a busy road. And I'll pull them over. I'll go over to the window and have a conversation, waving the other traffic around. Some of us have even got into podcasting. It's the state of our world, and our poor kids have to put up with this. And I'm sure that they're thinking, if we can only impound him, I mean, put him into a nursing home early. You see, I am the man. It happened again just the other day, just yesterday. We were in Costco, and I could have minded myself. I was only going to go in there for chickens and $285 worth of other things there. But there I was walking down the aisle, and I see this guy trying on this shirt, and I couldn't stop myself. I had to give him some feedback. "Looks nice on you," I told him. "Thanks." Wife looked at me like I had materialized from the snack aisle somehow magically, and she was not entertained. He says to me, "I couldn't give her to give me a straight answer," and she stares at me as I walk away. Victory, though. It was one of my victories. But I've crossed the line. I've gone full Dr. Rick case study. But maybe, I'm just saying this, maybe not the worst thing in the world. Because even if I'm the guy handing out the bathroom codes at the gas pumps, I also show some people that I'm present, engaged, trying, even if it's become part of my dad process. It wasn't that long ago that I had gone into my favorite coffee shop there, and there was a new barista there, and she was there at the cash register, and she was taking my order, and she started by just greeting that they give, standard greeting, and then she asks me what I would like, and she's got such a beautiful smile, and she's so engaging, and I'm captivated by her presentation right away, and I tell her I want a raspberry hibiscus tea, hot with just a touch of honey and just a little bit of milk. She dutifully writes it on the cup and then asks me for my name. Keith, I tell her. She's finishing up the writing. I notice something, though, something unique. I have a habit of doing this as well, but I look at people's tattoos. Sometimes they place them in weird places, but my eyes are still drawn to them. And I got to tell you, sometimes it's a little weird, but I look at tattoos and I always think whenever I see a tattoo of one thing, that if someone has gone through all of the pain in order to get a tattoo, there's got to be a story behind it. And since the podcast is called Story Mosaics, and our very theme is that everyone has a story and that your story is worth telling and worth telling well, I couldn't help myself. I know I could have helped myself. But I looked down and there was a tattoo on her wrist, across from side to side. It said Warrior. 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 Only the I was different. It was a semicolon. And underneath the warrior was another line that was not inked. I just asked her, "That is a beautiful tattoo," I said. And it was, although I showed its age a little bit because of the fraying edges and the muted nature of the tattoo. But it wasn't that old. She wasn't that old. And so I ask her, "I wish I had time, and I wish you could tell me, because I think there's a story behind that tattoo." Candidly, I had no idea what all of those symbols meant at the moment, but I'd walked through the door. She said, "Well, if you've got a minute." I said, "I did. I've got a minute." She said, "Let me get your drink." She put my cup down, slid it across, gave the barista that was beside her some instructions, and then she walked to the back. Just before she left me, she said, "I need to clock out." She walked to the back, she clocks out, she comes, and by then my drink had steeped just enough. She picked up the cup and walked around the end. Came over to me and we found a seat. She faced the door and I faced the wall. I'm ADD, so thankfully, I was thankful for that, frankly, because if I had faced the door, I'm constantly looking about who's coming in, who's coming in. And she didn't seem disturbed by that at all. She had a story to tell, and I was all ears. She started telling me the story of broken promises and shattered dreams. And pieces of a puzzle that were on the table that were fragmented and made no sense into a picture at all. Then she told me of dark, quiet moments. Moments in the shower and in her bedroom when tears flowed freely, but never in public and never around others. They were quiet tears, tears of hurt and anxiety. Terms of her tears of her brokenness. She finally told me about the ultimate day, the day where she went and got her brother's hunting knife. She placed it against her wrist and pushed and then pulled it down. She was shocked at the beginning because there wasn't excruciating pain and there wasn't even any blood at the moment. And then she saw soft pulsing of blood that appeared there, and then the trickle of venous blood that was coming down, and she saw it gathering. She had already put a towel there in preparation for the blood that she knew she would shed on that day. She looked at the blood that was on the towel as it was gathering there, and she knew that she had made the decision. You see, she had been a cutter for much of her young life. A cutter is someone who cuts themselves, usually in places that are not seen by other people. She had been a cutter because a cutter is typically just trying to say that the pain lets them know that they're still alive. But on this occasion, this was not a cry for help. This was not an effort to get attention. This was not a way just to prove that she was alive. This was the day that she would end her life. Grotesquely, she was mesmerized by the drips of blood that were coming and now soaking a circle in the towel. Mercifully, maybe, I don't know. But she passed out, she says at that moment. Maybe it was the blood. She told me she had always been afraid of blood, but somehow when it was her own, it didn't seem to mean the same as if it was an animal's or even the friend who got a hurt on their finger. No. This was her lifeblood on the towel, and she passed out. She awakened in an ambulance that was just taking her there to the ER, dropping her off, rushed into a room on a gurney. Now they were stitching the wound shut and taking her and admitting her not to the hospital, but to a psych unit. And in that psych unit, suddenly everything was turning, not about the injury that it was on her wrist, but now about what the injury was that was upon her heart. And she was trying to figure it all out, and yet it was coming so quickly. And she couldn't make any more sense of it than they could. Seemingly, outwardly, she was a beautiful young lady with all the opportunities that her future could afford to her. But sometimes people don't see what's going on inside of the heart and inside of the mind and ultimately inside of the spirit of a person. I looked at the tattoo. So, what does this mean? She said, So I take it you don't know what a semicolon means. I said, no, I have no idea. I'm just interested in hearing your story. Well, the semicolon is this. It means that I tried to take my life by any means. It could have been pills or the cut to the wrist or any number of different ways. Slamming the car into a tree, people try to take their lives in all kinds of ways. But they were, and then she paused because she was sticking on the same word that I would stick on. She said the semicolon means that I was not successful. How do you place suicide and success in the same sentence? They should not be able to coexist in that way. They shouldn't even be able to be in the same room. And here she was saying, I was not successful. I lived. And the semicolon says that I've lived with a purpose. I am a warrior. I am not defeated. I am not restrained. I am not in chains. I am not a broken puzzle or a broken person. There's more to come. She paused, and suddenly there's a new tone in her voice as she said, the semicolon says that my story isn't finished. Was in tears at this point. She was in tears at this point. And what was should have been a 15-minute break was now into a half hour. And I thought she was maybe in jeopardy of losing her job. And I said, I just want to thank you so much for sharing your story with me. She said, thank you for listening. She stood up from the table, walked back, and just resumed her job. I never got her name. She knew mine just because it was on the cup, but I had not even looked down on a name tag to find out who she was. But I knew so much about who she was. You see, that tattoo told of her past, her present, and even her future. You see, there was a line that I mentioned that was right under the word warrior. I just assumed that it was an uninked line, but that was the scar of her suicide attempt. The semicolon, that was the indicator of her future, that there was more to her story. And dare I say that God had more to her story. She may not even know it yet, but God had not put the period on her life. God had not punctuated the end. No, he had more for her to live for. She, her future, was going to be filled with being a warrior, past, present. It wasn't too long ago, again, where I had another time to understand the story of the semicolon. This time, not with a young lady that was a barista at the local coffee shop, but I'd gone over to a hometown in this area, Winchester, Indiana, to visit a place that had just experienced a devastating tornado. And a friend of mine and his extended family had suffered a direct hit upon his far the farmhouse and the barns that were part of that. He owned a massive hog operation, and there was a 150-foot barn that had had the whole roof taken off of it. And funny thing is, yeah, not one hog in that building had died. Not one hog going to hog heaven. Yeah, that's. Nevertheless, I got over there and I thought I would help. But 2 days after the event, when I got there, there were already 60 some Amish working on the roof. The whole thing had been taken off, just unscrolled. And there was debris throughout fields that went for miles. But we were just going around picking up debris and pieces of metal all over the place. And I watched in amazement as the Amish literally would grab a piece of steel and run it up ladders and bring it up the roof line onto the trusses and nail it down. And right behind them, as they were finishing their nailing, was another piece coming right behind them. And then they would come over the edge, come down, and there was other people running up. And they had finished that barn in 1 day's time. I saw very early on that I was not going to be much help. First of all, I'm afraid of heights. What am I going to do up on a roof? And though I picked up a little metal, there were a lot more guys that were a lot younger than me that were walking around. I went over to the house that had been destroyed, and part of the roof was gone, and so many of the things were destroyed. And there was a truck where the tree branch had literally come down on the top of the cab, and inside was a mother and her three children in the back, and not one of them was killed. It was miraculous in its very presence. And I looked up into the area up above where the bedroom was showing, and I looked, and there beside the bed was the mother's knitting, a basket with skeins tucked one into the other and needles pressed through, and an unfinished piece of maybe a sweater or a hat. Maybe it was a scarf. Power enough to peel back the roof and yet to leave the skein and the yarn. I walked out down the driveway a little bit when a man hollered at me from his truck. "Keith, is that you?" We had not seen each other in 20 years, maybe 30 years. Could it have been that long? His wife had been my secretary. one of my valued confidants and a person who read my heart and my work practices so very well. It's not easy working for a guy with ADD, but she handled it with aplomb. And it was so good to see him. I climbed in the truck and sat down beside him when we started sharing some stories. But I knew that there was a story that was deep on his heart, and it was going to be a hard one to broach, but we needed to talk. I'm going to call her Sally, not her real name. Said, I remember the day Sally died. His eyes filled with monster tears, and they rolled down his cheeks and they burned lines right down the edges there. And I could tell that even though it had been a while, the memory was so fresh. I looked around and I said, this all is so devastating. And he looked at me and he said, no, this is an inconvenience. Devastating is when you say goodbye to your spouse. So accurate. He raised his arm as he told me his story. And whereas the young lady's semicolon had been small and almost inconspicuous, only caught by the observant eye, his took up his whole wrist. A semicolon. Said, Andy, I know what that means. You want to tell me the story? Keith, I lost hope. I didn't see you tomorrow. I'm not an addict, but I started attending AA meetings 5, 6 times a week, sometimes even more, as I would attend 2 a day, just grasping for a reason to live. There were several times that I lost that hope and I lost that reason. So I tried. I tried to take my own life. Here's the irony. Some of you would say, if he had just met Jesus, he wouldn't have had those feelings. Oh, he knew Jesus. He knew Jesus. He knows Jesus. It's not that Jesus doesn't keep us from those moments of anguish and despair. It's just that our humanness sometimes wins the battle. In this case, I have to tell you, I had an unbelievable conversation. We talked about future moments where we would talk. More than anything else, I just wanted him to have a reason to live for the next 24 hours. Put one more foot in front of the other before he could get to his next meeting, find just a little bit more of hope. You know what? I have to tell you, I don't know where you're at today. And though there may not be a symbol on your wrist or a tattoo that proclaims your confusion, I don't know whether the money has gotten so out of whack that you don't see any hope of climbing out of the debt, and actually maybe even the time in prison you might spend there because of the actions that you've taken. Or maybe the marriage that you had for those 50 years, and now you're old and you shouldn't be thinking of taking your life, but when you lose your mate so long, it's so hard. Maybe that divorce has pulled the rug completely out from under you. Maybe you're a single mom with kids going through that. And maybe you're a single dad who lost his work or his employment or his ch kids in the process. I don't know what the story is. There's that word again, story. Everybody has a story. And though Story Mosaic says we want to help you tell yours well, I need to tell you something far more important than that. Everyone has a story. Everyone has a story. God knows your story. And that your story matters. more than that story mattered to Keith Wooden that was sitting in the coffee shop, or more than that story of that Keith Wooden had listened to while he sat in that truck. Your story matters to And so in that moment of anguish, before you take a step that is irrevocable, would you remember that your story is not You're not the author, you're not the writer of the story, but he is, and he knows, and he has a next step in this beautiful, beautiful, beautiful story of yours. I can tell you that those steps are not easy, and the journey may be hard, but there is a reason why it's a semicolon. Because the last word has not been written. If you're struggling right now, would you do me a favor? Because I'd like nothing more than to have at least a conversation with you via email, or maybe even one in person. And so would you reach out to me at story.mosaics1, that's the number one, at gmail.com, story.mosaics1 at gmail.com, and let me know about maybe how this made sense to you. Every once in a while, I still go down to that coffee shop, and my barista does not work there anymore. But when I sit at the table, I recall that conversation. That conversation that said simply, I want to hear your story. And on that count, I don't need to see Dr. Rick. I hope my kids take after me 100%. Thank you for joining us on Story Mosaic.